Hello everyone, John Steele here again. Welcome to JTalk Extra Time. In this episode, you're going to listen to part three of the big JTET J3 season preview. So that's me and Magic Mike Innes running the rule over the final six teams from the J3 roster that we didn't talk about yet in either part one or part two. So basically, in the first half of this podcast, you'll hear us talk about Sanuki, Imabari and Ehime, the Shikoku trio in this season's J3. Then after a short break in part two, you're going to hear us talk about Kyushu. The three Kyushu sides in J3 for this season are Kita Kyushu, Miyazaki and Kagoshima. So I hope you enjoy hearing our thoughts on those teams ahead of the new season. Just one quick note on the Kita Kyushu segment. The podcast audio isn't great. I think it might be something to do with the fact that we were recording in my quarantine hotel after I got back from the UK a week or so ago. So apologies for that. The audio does clear up quite quickly, but it's noticeably worse in the Kita Kyushu segment. So apologies for that. But that's all from me. Enjoy the previews. And Mike and I started off with a few deep breaths talking about Kamatamare Sanuki. Welcome back, everyone. John Steele here again, and I'm joined now, as always, for J3 preview pods by Mike Innes. Mike, how's it going?
Hi, John. Great here. Thank you very much. And of course, excited to be back and talking about some J3.
Fantastic. And I know, just peeping behind the curtain, Mike, it's very early in the morning, isn't it, UK time? So thank you for rising early to the challenge for part three of our J3 season previews. No time to waste, because I think you have to get ready for work in due course. So in part one, this episode, we're going to focus on three teams from the Shikoku region in J3 for this season. And there's no more avoiding it, Mike. I think we need to start by talking about Kamatamare Sanuki, don't we? And they finished bottom of the J3 table last season in 15th place. They were the only team who was kind of cut adrift. They were 6 points behind everybody else, and what can we expect from Sanuki this time around? And before I bring you in, a quick question from Gabriele Anello on Twitter. He's asking that once relegation from J3 down to the Japan Football League, the JFL, is in place, do we think Sanuki would be one of the favourites to go down and back to the kind of semi-professional tier? So that there's no relegation this season, but it is something which is in the pipeline. Mike, should Sanuki be worried, do you think?
Come on then, John. We can do this. We can talk about a new season at Sanuki. Let's gird our loins and get into it. Let's perhaps begin by referring back to the last episode that we recorded, during which we covered Azul Claro Numazu and Gainare Tottori as clubs who are at the lower end of any kind of scale that measures the size or capability of J3 clubs. And other teams that we've discussed have the luxury of at least some sort of choice as they build their squads for the new season. But for Numazu, Tottori and now Sanuki, circumstances mean that they just seem to have to do the best they can with what they've got and just try to be competitive. So over the winter, the Noodle Boys, maybe they've introduced their own fan token cryptocurrency. But what they've also done is that they've only managed to source a single player from another J-League club. And that was a last-minute loan. Kenyan forward Ismail Dunga from Sagan Tosse, a replacement for Mark Ajay Kurita, who's taken a loan deal with Suzuka in the JFL. Throughout the rest of the closed season, when Sanuki were shopping at all, they were shopping non-league, more specifically in the JFL for Kohei Matsumoto from FC Tiamo Hirakata, in the regional leagues for Kakeru Aoto from Okosias Kyoto, and even in the prefectural leagues for Yusuke Yoshii from Fukuyama City. All the players named are forwards, which should give an indication of where Senuki's priorities lie. It's going to be very interesting to see what effect Senuki's limited transfer activity has on the first team that their coach Toshihiro Nishimura is able to select. And it certainly looks like an opportunity for players from universities and high schools to get J3 experience. I wonder if guys like Mizuki Uchida from Kokushikan University or Keitaro Iori from Sendai University might find a place in the back three, or either of the specially designated players from last year. That's the teenage forwards Eugene Fukui and Shoya Koyama can make an impact up front. It looks like the locals are keen to see Koyama, who's from Seneki under-18s and was top scorer in last year's Shikoku under-18 league. In terms of the departures, a couple of the old guard, Kazumasa Takagi and Akira Takeuchi, have retired after less than stellar seasons. And the only regular starter signed by another club is the wingback Akira Satsukawa, who's joined Kagoshima. NHK Takamatsu, the local NHK, reports that Kamatamari are aiming for a top half finish, but Seneki's hopes of achieving that goal rest on the possibility that some of the newcomers will click with players who've stayed on and at least have a season's tough experience behind them. Guys like attacking midfielder Shunta Nakamura, who extends his loan from Yamagata, Masataka Nishimoto, central midfielder, and ex-Nagano defender Genichi Endo. All that might happen, but as we wait for the season to start, it's hard to predict anything more than a bottom three finish for Sanuki. And in terms of Gab's question, well, you look at how far behind the other clubs Sanuki were last season, as you mentioned, John. You look at how they've always been a struggling club. And I remember when we were in the green room before a previous episode, John, you made the point that clubs like Sanuki, also Tottori as another example, they might have been the best additions to the J-League at that time. But clubs entering J3 in recent years seem to be much better organised. And if Sanuki were in the JFL now, could they compete with Mie, FC Osaka, Nara or Verspa Oita? Look at all this. Look at the players that they're able to bring in. And although over the winter, Sanuki reconfigured their organisational plans and stated they're aiming for J2 2024 and J1 2028, that looks like a fantasy at the moment. And you have to worry for them when relegation is introduced.
Yeah, J1 by 2028 is a ballsy thing to put on your website, given the current circumstances, I think. So you sort of have to tip your hat to the optimism on show, I think. But Mike, I can't disagree with anything that you mentioned. I mean, just looking at some of the, unfortunately, I suppose we have to look at some of Sanuki's stats from last year. Just the four wins all season, 20 goals scored. So like you said, it's not hard to pinpoint that, you know, the attack is where they need to improve quickly. I think it looks like a Dunga on loan from Tosu, he might be the sort of main striker, mightn't he? Just looking at the I have a slight advantage over you here, I suppose. I've got the new season sort of Meikan players guide, and in the forward positions, the top striker, they have Dunga listed, but also kind of in sort of parentheses, there's plenty of other players behind, like Matsumoto, for example, and Shigematsu. So I don't think they're quite sure yet who the sort of main striker is going to be. But I guess Dunga, surely, if you bring in a player on loan from a J1 side, he's going to get a lot of game time. But yeah, they were very very poor, weren't they, last year? And there isn't a great deal in that, those kind of new signings, to suggest it's going to be much better in 2022. But we have to be optimistic, I suppose, as things certainly couldn't be much worse, could they, than last season. So fingers crossed it's a better season. But in terms of Gab's question, I think Sanuki, I mean, when you put that squad side by side with some of the squads in the JFL right now, there isn't much difference, is there? And some of the JFL squads might actually be stronger, as you were alluding to. So I predict another fairly attritional and tough sort of 9 or 10 months for Sanuki. I'm afraid, if any Sanicky fans are listening. But yeah, we wait to see. Mike, let's we did it, Mike. We got through it. So we're buoyed by that success. Let's move on. Let's talk about a team who perhaps more chance of finishing in the top half or a little bit higher. It's we want to talk about Ema Badi, who finished 11th in the table last season, and they kind of had a bit of a weird. They suffered from that second season syndrome, didn't they? After having a really, really good debut in 2020, the first half of the season was very poor, and they changed managers, and then things seemed to improve a little bit in the second half. So my inkling is they're obviously going to be aiming a bit higher than 11th this time. But before I bring you in on Ema Badi, Mike, we had a question from J Football Analytics on Twitter, who was asking how easy or difficult is it going to be for Ema Badi to replace Wataru Harada, the sort of, I think he's a right-sided defender, midfielder. He's moved on to Tosu in J1. So how difficult is it going to be to replace Harada, Mike, and how difficult is it going to be for Ema Badi to improve on that 11th place finish from last year?
It was a pretty tough second season, wasn't it, in the league for Ema Badi. On the way to that 11th place finish, they went through three coaches. But as with Tottori in the last episode, Ema Badi had a bit more of an encouraging end to the year. But since then, I haven't really detected a very positive vibe among the fans or J3 watchers. And I feel a bit torn when looking at how Ema Badi might perform in the year ahead. They're one of those J3 clubs who do have a foreign contingent. Certainly not all clubs do that, but Ema Badi do. And apart from a reserve goalkeeper, all of them, that is forwards Valdemar and Leo Mineiro, and centre-backs Oscar Linton and Jung Hanchol, were released at the end of last season. And they'll need to incorporate into the squad three new replacements, a Brazilian forward, Marcus Indio, an Australian forward, Mohamed Adam, and a rookie Korean midfielder, Park Subin. I can't think of an example of a new foreign player who came into Japan and J3 last season and achieved success, especially when even such a basic issue like entry into the country for people with new visas is unclear. And that compromises an ability to go through pre-season training with the rest of the squad. So that looks like a complex situation for Ema Badi to manage coming into the new season. And I note that as we record, Ema Badi have two registered forwards who've participated in pre-season. As I see it, John, maybe three new players look like they'll find regular places in the starting lineup. I'm going to imagine that Marcus Indio will go up front. Wakaba Shimoguchi on loan from Okayama at right wing back, and Kazuka Nakagawa on loan from Ryukyu in attacking midfield. Shimoguchi looks like he'll occupy the spot vacated by Wataru Harada. So I think that the answer to J Football Analytics' question, man for man, is likely to be a no. The list of players coming in looks pretty low-key to me. Certainly, apart from the fact that they have new foreign players, there are no particular standouts that will really take the team or the squad forward. Other incomers like the left-back Kohei Tomita from Kyoto. There's a veteran centre-back who you'll be familiar with from your JTET beat, John. That's a junior Hosokawa from Mito. Lone forward Misaki Haruyama from Machida. They appear to be more sort of squad depth rather than an immediate injection of quality. So maybe after a turbulent year last year, Ema Badi wants some stability, and to see the coach Kazuaki Hashikawa, previously the head of the academy, give young players their chance. I expect to see guys like teenage forward Taisei Takase, big centre-back Tomoya Ando, and utility player Takuya Shimamura come more to the fore, although there are a good number of other players to whom Hashikawa may choose to give more minutes. Maybe more than other coaches in the division this year, it seems down to Hashikawa to bring about any improvement in results for Imabari. And I'm torn, as I say, because it would be great to see these young guys to succeed, move forward with their careers, and put a difficult 2021 behind them. But overall, Imabari look like they're treading water a bit.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. I mean, yeah, looking at the squad on paper, you can definitely see that it's had a facelift in terms of more emphasis on youth. You know, quite a few of the sort of more experienced players have left, haven't they? Like Arima, Miao, they've both gone to Hachinohe, for example. Maybe we mentioned so. Yeah, it's difficult. It's a difficult one to call, Mike. My gut feeling is that they will do a little bit better with the, sorry, a little bit better than 11th, because they seemed to be on the right track towards the tail end of last season, didn't they? And they were a bit more solid. And I think you're right to pick out Taisei Takase, because I think he scored a couple of goals and looked pretty exciting. You know, when he got some game time towards the end of the season as well. But yeah, I don't really see enough in that Imabari squad right now to see them as like a kind of, you know, top six or promotion challenging team. I think that might be something that comes further down the line, but you never know. These players, Marcus Indio, Mohamed Adam, kind of unknown quantities for me. So they might turn out to be really good once they're into the country and they're integrated into the team and can join in with first team activities. But yeah, I think you're right. I think a season of sort of slow and steady progress is probably most likely, isn't it? I think as well with Imabari, we often end up talking about kind of off the pitch sort of progress with the club as well. I think their new stadium project at Satoyama is still progressing, so that might be. I'm not sure exactly when that's due to open. Whether it's 1 year from now, or I think it might be 2024.
And I think it's next season. I think it's 2023.
2023. Okay, so this time next year we might be talking about them moving into a brand new stadium, which will be exciting. I'm sorry, the only other bit of Imabari trivia that I wanted to mention was they did have an issue where they I don't know if you were across this, Mike, when they started selling their new uniforms, their new kits, they put their own font for the numbers and on the back. Which, you know, the J League rules are now, there's the standardized font that you have to use for names and numbers on the back of shirts. So I think Imabari initially were selling them with, they have their own kind of brand that they use on the website, their own kind of typeface, typesetting. But they were selling their uniforms with that on, and they had to refund those and I think give supporters one that had the official J League name and number on. No big deal, but for a club with sort of Imabari's quite impressive sort of merchandise commercial operation, I thought that was quite a surprising mistake. And it's the sort of thing you might expect from your Sanikis, to be honest. Yeah, that's something maybe that I thought was kind of not symptomatic of anything wider, but definitely an interesting little quirk from Imabari's pre-season. Okay, Michael, well, what about the third team in our kind of Shikoku trio in J3 this season? It's Ehime FC. Now, they're back in the third tier of the Japanese game after a whopping 17 years at a higher level. So they finished 20th in last season's J2 table to be relegated down to J3. And yeah, how do we see them shaping up? For this year, we had a question from Gabriele Anello again. He says, in his opinion, it's hard to see them being a sort of promotion front runner. He thinks they might experience a bit of a kind of culture shock back in the third tier and finish in mid-table. What do you think, Mike?
Yeah, on to the third of our trio of Shikoku teams, and Ehime's relegation means that we have an Ehime derby to look forward to for the first time in J3, as the mighty Mikans will meet their prefectural rivals, Imabari. And whisper it quietly, but it feels like, compared with their two neighbours, it may be Ehime who head into the season with the greatest confidence. Coach Kiyotaka Ishimaru returns to the club, having previously been in charge in 2013 and 2014. His squad has undergone quite an overhaul since relegation from J2 was confirmed. And I know that some observers have commented that Ehime look better prepared for J3 this year than they did for the higher division in 2021. I mean, of course, they have lost some players who've moved on to higher division sides. 10-goal top scorer Yoshiki Fujimoto has gone to Yamagata. Defender Rikia Motegi has joined Ormia. And all-action midfielder Takumu Kawamura has gone back to Hiroshima at the end of a three-year loan spell. And there's a particular need to rebuild their goalkeeping capability as Yota Akimoto has retired after missing the second half of last season with injury. His hapless, I'm obliged to use that adjective, his hapless replacement Masahiro Okamoto has at the age of 38 managed to get himself a deal with a J1 club for the first time since 2009. Okamoto has joined Tosu, and Taichi Kato has signed for Gamba on a permanent deal, having previously been on loan. So it looks that like Ishimano will have something of a new look, a fresh team, starting with keeper Kenta Tokushige, more than 220 J-League appearances to his name. He joins from Nagasaki and has been made the captain. In the defence, there's the massively experienced Ryota Moriwaki from Kyoto. He spent a couple of seasons on loan at Ehime 15 years ago, but also the youngster Kei Oshiro, impressive last year on loan at YSCC. He joins on a permanent deal from Urawa. Then in the midfield, there's Y player Shunsuke Motegi. Respectable stats over the last 4 years at Mito and Ryukyu. And moving further forward, there's Takumi Sasaki, decent J2 experience from Seneki and Yamaguchi, and fully three players I'm looking forward to seeing in the orange shirt, John. Kohei Shin joins on loan from Gunma, a lively player who started out at YSCC where he scored 15 goals in 2019. Ryo Sato scored 12 for Tiamo Hirakata in the JFL and has the Ehime fans excited, but not as excited as does Motoki Ohara. He's a prospect who joins from Tokai Gakuen University. Did play a handful of games for Ehime last year, most memorably when he scored a cracker in a draw at Iwata in October. A name to look out for, Motoki Ohara. It's not often, is it, that we talk pre-season about Ehime as a competitive side, but I think there are some optimistic signs for their long-suffering supporters. Promotion, a possibility, but maybe not. By my calculations, John, only one team relegated out of J2 has ever gone straight back up the following year. But here's a prediction. Not only the best team in Shikoku, but after Sagamihara, the best of the four teams to come down.
Yeah, it all sounds good to me. I'm just casting a glance over the squad list for Ehime now. And I think I'm kind of with you, Mike. I'm a little bit kind of warmer on Ehime's chances than Gab seemed to be in his question. So, but I know Gab is a very, very keen J3 watcher. So he might know something that we don't. But I think defensively, they had to do something about the goalkeeping situation, didn't they? Or the defence in general was just terrible last year for the most part of Ehime. I think Tokushige is a great signing to come in and be a bit more, you know, add some solidity to that back line. They also have Naoki Kuriyama, and if he's fit, yeah, Ryota Moriwaki. That sounds like a really good sort of, you know, two or three. I'm not sure what system they're going to play, actually, whether it'll be four at the back or three. I think if it's four at the back, that's a pretty good centre-back pairing you've got right there, isn't it, for J3 level. I was a bit concerned about, how many goals they're going to get, because you mentioned that they're losing Yoshiki Fujimoto, they've lost Takumu Kawamura as well, who are kind of two main goal threats from last year. And I think they might struggle to have anybody scoring more than 10 goals each. But I mean, Kohei Shin, you know, he had that really good season at YSCC, got him a move to the higher level, you know, to Gunma. But he hasn't really done it for Gunma in the time that he's been there. So I think a lot might depend on how confident he is, and also where he's played, whether he's a wide forward or whether he's straight down the middle, because at Gunma he was often used in a wide position. He didn't get too many chances to score goals himself. But then there's also, looking at some of the other additions, Riki Matsuda, you know, Asahi Yada, they'll add some creativity in the midfield, you know, in the top third of the pitch. And yeah, you highlighted Motoki Ohara, the rookie. He's been given the number 10 shirt. I don't know whether that's a sign that they are, you know, light in terms of numbers, or I think it's more likely that he's expected to play a lot. And, you know, being given the number 10 shirt is not really a kind of, not really a pressure for him. I think he's ready for it. So I would say Ehime, yeah, looking at the squad on paper and the transfer business that they've done, it's clear that they're aiming for promotion, isn't it? And I would think maybe a top four, top five, top six finish looks very much in their grasp. But yeah, you also mentioned it's not often that teams that are relegated down from J2 make an immediate return, you know, go straight back up. So Ehime will have to keep that in mind. But I think that looks like a pretty strong squad. Kiyotaka Ishimaru, the coach, I think, I'm pretty sure he's a good manager. He did pretty well when he was at Kyoto and Yamagata, although I know he's been Ehime manager before, so he'll know the club and, yes, shouldn't have any trouble getting things moving the way he wants to. But, yeah, we'll wait and see. But I think, yes, of the three Shikoku sides we've discussed in part one, Mike, Ehime fans should be the most confident and the most bullish going into the new season for me. Okay, on that note, Mike, shall we take a quick recording break? I think that's all for part one. When we come back in part two, we have three more teams to run the rule over, and they're all from the Kyushu region. So a Kyushu special is coming up after this. Hi again, everyone. Mike and I are refreshed and ready to continue. So in part two of this episode, Mike, it's our kind of Kyushu special, isn't it? Three more teams for us to take a look at from this season's J3, and they're all based in the Kyushu region. So it kind of almost as if we planned it, they fit together quite neatly. So first of all, Mike, let's talk about Giravance Kitakyushu, of course, sadly relegated from J2 last season. I think they finished in 21st place, didn't they, if I remember rightly. And how are they shaping up for a season in J3? We had questions or comments, really, from Gabriele again. He says from his point of view, they had quite an enigmatic off-season, and he thinks that they're not really in the promotion picture right now. Johnny Nickel, Blog Gamba, making a welcome appearance in the questions here, asks about Yuya Takazawa, the striker. Is he an example of a transfer coming 6 months too late? Because Kitakyushu, we were crying out for forwards, weren't they, for the whole of the season last year, and never managed to get anybody in really to help them out up front. So, yeah, Mike, Kitakyushu, are they enigmatic? Should they be in the promotion conversation? And how about Yuya Takazawa? What do you think?
Well, they're the last of the relegated teams to be covered in these previews, John. Kitakyushu are currently in a year and a half long slump. So at the midpoint of the 2020 season, they were top of J2, a point ahead of Tokushima, seven ahead of Fukuoka, the two teams that ended up being promoted, and 27 ahead of Ehime, whom they now join in J3. Coach Shinji Kobayashi has moved to a technical director type of role, and the club have made an internal appointment for his successor. So it's Kenichi Amano who takes over, his first ever job as the man in charge, although he has extensive experience from being on the staff at Urawa and FC Tokyo. Inevitably, Kitakyushu have lost their star man, Daigo Takahashi, who returns to Shizu after a lengthy loan period. A very impressive 26 goals and 12 assists in 96 starts for the club. Three centre-backs have also moved on. Kota Muramatsu to Nagasaki. Veteran Kazuya Okamura has joined Gifu. And Jin Ikoma, who also played on the right, he signed for Yamaguchi. Other players to depart the club include left midfielder Takayuki Arakaki, who moves back to J2 in Yamagata, and seven goal forward Takamitsu Tomiyama, who's returned to Ormia after his loan. Apart from Takahashi, no real standout losses there, but as has been covered by JTET, by the end of last season, Kitakyushu had become a really pretty poor side. What does that mean for their ability to attract new players and so bring to an end, after 18 months, their downward slide? Well, there's not great news for fans looking for replacements for those defenders who've left. Maybe rookie Korki Hasegawa from Juntendo University will step up. Otherwise, it's Kotaro Fujiwara, possessed of lots of J2 experience from Tokushima, but last year pretty much the fourth choice centre at Kagoshima. Nobuki Iketaka may see some playing time as a wide midfield player, is loaned by Urawa to his third J3 club in 3 seasons. But the Giyama supporters will be pinning their hopes on two new strikers. There's Yosuke Kamigeta, signed from Hachinohe after 3 seasons there, also has J3 experience from Tochigi. And then, as Yuya Takazawa joins on loan from Oita. Certainly, I can remember a year ago we were wondering where the goals were going to come from for Giravans, and maybe if they'd been able to bring Takazawa in during the season, he could have had an impact. There are a few guys like him mentioned in this episode who fall into the same category, namely that the club he's joining will be hoping he can recapture form from a previous J3 season. In Takazawa's case, his rookie year of 2019, when he scored 17 for Gunma Kōhei Shin at Ehime, in a situation I'll be mentioning another later on. Is Takazawa going to win that prize? And is all of this enough to suggest a good season for Kitakyushu? I have to say, I can't see much there to get excited about. I'm not seeing a particularly strong first 11, although maybe players like Taiga Maekawa, Shun Hirayama, and Takayaki Homura will find their feet more in J3. Amano doesn't come across as a very imaginative coaching appointment, and Giravants don't seem to have approached the season with the sense of intent you get from Ehime or indeed Sagamihara. The priority for 2022 appears to be to bring to an end the team's lengthy on-field decline and to start to re-stabilise.
Yeah, it's funny that you end on a point about restabilization, because just listening to your analysis and looking at the squad list at the same time, yeah, I got the feeling that it was more, yeah, same as you, consolidation almost is the seems to be the aim of the squad building that's gone on. I take your point as well about Amano, the coach. I mean, we talked about this, I think. I can't remember if I was talking to you or someone on a J2 preview, but it's a point I seem to make quite often, is appointing someone sort of unknown and inexperienced from the backroom staff doesn't have the most amazing results, you know, historically speaking. So I think it's, while he seems like a nice guy based on his sort of profile picture in the player's guide, I think the jury is very much out on Amano and what he's going to bring to the team. It looks like a fairly straightforward 4-4-2. Again, which kind of plays into the sort of imagination side of things. It doesn't look like there is too much imagination or creativity going on. And yeah, in terms of strikers, they were desperately poor in the top part of the pitch, weren't they, in 2021 in J2. So they've got Yosuke Kamigata, they've got Takazawa now to try and help out up there. But I think, yeah, looking at the squad as a whole, I mean, it's very much a sort of borderline sort of J3, J2 squad, isn't it? So I think, I think there's the potential for them to be a sort of top five or top six team. But again, you made the comparison with Ehime, for example. I think Ehime have really sort of grasped the net a little bit more, haven't they, in terms of the winter transfer business. So I'd definitely give Ehime a better chance than Kitakyushu at the moment. But yeah, there are some good or interesting young players, as you mentioned, and Yeah, maybe they'll surprise us, but yeah, I think the aim of the game is definitely just some stability and some consistency after a pretty harrowing sort of 18-month spell, as you mentioned, Mike. So yeah, we'll wait and see. I hope they do well because it's a beautiful stadium, the Mikuni World Stadium, and I think it's probably at least worthy of J2 football, if not even J1, maybe one day in the future. But yeah, the squad on paper at the moment definitely looks like it's yeah, maybe going to be in J3 for at least a year, well, at least 2 years, and maybe longer. But yeah, we hope they at least entertain us and maybe even surprise us as along the way. Talking about entertainment and surprise, Mike, we'll move on to another one of our Kyushu-based teams now. It's Miyazaki. Now, obviously, they're going into their second season in J3 now after surprising pretty much everybody by finishing third and being in the kind of a contention for a top two finish right up until the final day. I know they've lost some of their most impressive performers from last season. And I think they're possibly in a little bit of danger of flying under the radar again because they're the only team in this episode that we didn't have any questions about when we put the call out for questions in advance. And I have to be honest, I haven't really been focused too much on Miyazaki in terms of my pre-season preparation. So I just assumed they were going to have a difficult second season maybe and not finish as high as third now that the division looks a bit stronger. Are we in danger of writing them off or overlooking Miyazaki unfairly, do you think, Mike?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's always the case, though, isn't it, John, that clubs who have a great season but don't get promoted are then faced with a significant rebuilding task because they then lose their best players to other clubs. And this is basically what's happened to Miyazaki over the winters, over the winter. So listeners to J Talk Short Corner last year will know that their attacking players in particular were smash hits, not only in terms of the stats, but also the way that they played the game. So although I'm disappointed that I won't be able to talk about them again for this season, it's right and proper that they get their chance with bigger clubs. And so top scorer Kosuke Fujioka goes to Gifu, where I very much hope he gets his chance to play. His 9-goal, 7-assist partner, Kaito Umeda, and one of J3 2021's top performing central midfielders, Ryosuke Maeda, have both joined Mito. Wide midfielder Ryo Watanabe has chosen to go to Hachinohe, which could be interpreted as an interesting take on the two clubs' prospects for the season ahead. And Miyazaki's second and third choice centre backs, Shintaro Ihara and Ryuya Ohata, have also joined J3 rivals Kagoshima and Toyama, respectively. So if Miyazaki are to avoid the old second season syndrome, John, experienced by many clubs after a move to a higher division, there's a very significant task facing the new Tegevajaro coach. That's Yasushi Takasaki, who spent the last 3 seasons in university football, but prior to that was on the coaching staff at Iwate, which at least should give him knowledge of the division. Interestingly, Takasaki has his admirers among fans of Kawasaki as the man who created the golden age, as he was the under 12 coach at Frontale who brought through players like Kaoru Mitoma and Ao Tanaka. Who's he got to work with at Miyazaki? Defensive gaps alongside the captain Kenji Dai look set to be plugged by Yudai Okuda, loaned from Tokushima and a regular starter at Iwaki last year, or Shuhei Takizawa from Mito, who hasn't really made the grade in J2 but played three full seasons in J3 for Ryukyu. There are several options to replace Watanabe. Megumu Nishida, loaned from Kanazawa and very impressive last year at Iwate, may ultimately be first choice, but he's picked up an injury pre-season, which could have prompted the late signing from Machida of Yuki Okada, who began his career, wouldn't you know it, in the under 12s at Kawasaki. Much attention has been on the signing of ex-international forward Masato Kudo, who spent the last couple of seasons in Australia. Is he going to blow J3 defences away, or will he turn out to be a bit of a dud? Bustling rookie Keigo Hashimoto stays on and looks set to be a more important player this year, but other incoming strikers include Takuma Sonoda from the bench at Kagoshima, with echoes of Takizawa and Shin. He was a 19-goal striker for Numazu in 2017, but hasn't recaptured that form since. Tomoya Kitamura from promoted Kumamoto. And instead of mentioning Sota Sato from Kita Kyushu, I'll instead give a heads up regarding rookie Kazuki Takahashi, very prolific for Osaka University of Health and Sport Sciences. The stars aligned for Miyazaki last year, and they achieved outstanding results with pretty much the same team that had got them promoted from the JFL. Most fans seem to be expecting a pretty sharp downturn, and although it will be hard to predict a top three or four final placing, I think Takasaki comes into the season with a balanced squad which should be able to deliver a mid-table finish.
Yeah, I think it's, like you said, that some of those departures are really big, aren't they? Fujioka, Umeda, for example, in particular, as well as Maeda in the midfield. But we should also mention some of this kind of key players from last year that they've managed to keep, like Chibu in the midfield, Tokunaga out on the right as well. And I think there's one more that I wanted to mention. Oh, Shunsuke Ueda, the goalkeeper, who was important for their kind of defensive work last year. So they have just about, I think, like you mentioned the word balance, I think they have balanced well. You know, some players have moved on, but some of the nucleus of the team that was so good last year have stayed. And some of the additions look interesting. I think Masato Kudo, I mean, he's older now, but the technique and the experience that he has will surely be very welcome. In the form of Takuda Sonoda, like you said, if this was 2019, we'd be talking about one of the signings of the winter window. But I think last year he only got 2 goals from 20 appearances for Kagoshima, it says here. I don't know how many of those were starts and how many were sub.
Yeah, he made 3 starts.
3 starts, yeah. So he's not, you know, he's coming from the bench, you know, from the fringes of a team which finished below Miyazaki last year. So it's nothing to get too excited about just there. But I'm inclined to agree. I think what you'll find, and what I'm expecting anyway from Miyazaki, is a sort of managed regression. And I think I would expect to see them finish somewhere in the top half, but not as high as third this year, which it sounds like you're sort of in a similar frame of mind, Mike, maybe. So, but we'll wait and see. And, it's worth bearing in mind. We had no idea what to expect from Miyazaki this time last year, and they surprised or stunned everybody really with how they played and the football they produced. So I'm very wary of being made to look foolish by the same team the following season. So I think they'll do okay. I don't think they'll do too badly, but if they can finish in the top three again, that would be an absolutely amazing achievement from the new coach Takasaki, I think. So top half, some good football, and maybe a slight sort of managed regression from last year would be my best guess for Miyazaki. Mike, one more team for us to run the rule over in this preview. It's Kagoshima, another sort of Kyushu-based team who finished seventh in the standings in J3 last year. Now, Kagoshima generated a lot of interest on Twitter when we put a call out for questions. So from J Football Analytics, he was asking, do Kagoshima have what it takes for promotion this year, bearing in mind that they have a smaller squad than some of the other teams? It might be harder for them to compete. He also asked about Rei Yonezawa, who scored 9 goals in 27 games for Kagoshima last year. Is he able to get 10 goals or even more this time around? So, Mike, plenty for you to get your teeth into there, I suppose. What about Kagoshima? Is their squad too small? Can they get promoted? And how about Rei Yonezawa?
Well, what a journey it's been, John. And like the travel writer Alan Booth's classic book, The Roads to Sata, in which he describes his great walk from the northern tip of Hokkaido to the south of Kyushu, our J3 2022 previews end at Kagoshima. And I think in some respects, we conclude where we began, at Hachinohe, about whom I was optimistic for the new season. And the reason why I take that view is because Kagoshima are my dark horse for the year ahead. A banker, a rock solid bet, no, but there's enough about them to believe that the smoking volcanoes could fire their way to the top. With Nobuhiro Ueno departed as coach, Kagoshima have made one of the most interesting appointments of the season in Naoto Otake, who spent most of his career on the staff at Kyoto. For the last 4 years, though, he's been the coach at Iga FC Kunoichi Mie, who last season he took to the title in the Nadeshiko League Division 1, now the second tier of women's club football in Japan. So Otake is making the switch to a men's team, and he's doing it off the back of a very successful season as Mie won the division by 9 clear points. In the J3 preview pods a year ago, we congratulated Kagoshima on an imaginative coaching appointment in Arthur Pappas. Clearly, that didn't work out, but the club look like they are keen to try a comparable strategy with Otake. In terms of the squad, yes, there has been a bit of streamlining. More players have moved out than have come in, but only two regular starters have departed, namely Keisuke Tanabe, who played centre back and central midfield and has gone back to Kumamoto, and the right back Fogechi, who's been released. A straight swap for Tanabe looks to be Kenta Hirose, captain at Nagano last season and already appointed captain at Kagoshima for this. There's no direct replacement for Fogechi, but Atsushi Satsukawa from Senoki may slot in. It's in the front positions that things get exciting for Kagoshima. Top scorer Rei Yonezawa does remain, but alongside him, there's what looks to be a pretty significant upgrade. Flop Brazilian forward Gustavo has gone. The underwhelming Yusei Kayanuma has moved to Hachinohe. As we've mentioned, the phased out Takuma Sonoda has joined Miyazaki. But when it comes to attacking midfielders, they've brought in the veteran Frank Romero from Niigata, who looked to me like he could still do a job in a top half a J2 team last year. And Kota Hoshi, former Fukushima captain, played in a deeper role for the last 2 seasons at Sagamihara, but has an eye for goal and great technique. Then when it comes to strikers, Kagoshima have kept the promising Shunsuke Yamamoto, who started to find playing time and goals in the latter stages of last season, and they've signed workhorse Corki Arita from Corfu, better known for his time at Kyoto and more recently Ehime. And a rookie to keep an eye on in this part of the team is Mikuto Fukuda, who won a place in the Tokai University League Best 11 last year, playing for Tokai Gakuen University with the previous mentioned sorry, it's Ohara, isn't it? Whom, as we discussed, has joined Ehime. To come back to our question, I think there's evidence here that Kagoshima have players that can share the load with Yonezawa, so he may score fewer goals in a more potent attacking team. So put all this together, and I think there's a possibility for Kagoshima. Of course, a lot rests on Otake, and it's going to be fascinating to see how he gets on. Overall, his squad looks stronger than last year, so I'll go with Dark Horse and the best performing of the three Kyushu teams.
Yeah, interesting stuff. Yeah, I didn't know anything about Naoto Otake, so I'm really glad of the kind of biography that you added, because I didn't know about his record in the Nadeshiko League with Kunoichi. So that's interesting. And yeah, looking at the squad for Kagoshima, I mean, on J Football Analytics Point, I think it is a smaller squad than some of the others we talked about in the previews, isn't it? But something that, you know, Sean Carroll often mentions and is mentioned a few times on the pod is for quite a few of the teams that have bigger squads, they have plenty of players who never play. right, who never appear. So I think maybe we're looking more at a team in Kagoshima where you can see a sort of 22, 25 man squad, if you like. But you can imagine almost everybody getting game time at some point and being involved. So I think maybe it's an interesting move. You know, I think if I were a coach, I'd much rather have sort of 26, 25, 26 players who I knew I could use than a 40-man squad which had 14 players I wasn't interested in, you know, who just kind of getting in the way and taking up space. So, yeah, interesting stuff. Yeah, I think midfield looks pretty stacked, doesn't it, with Frank Romero, Kota Hoshi, you mentioned. I also see Yuji Kimura has come in as well, which is a pretty decent addition at J3 level, in my opinion. So, yeah, Koki Arita is a player that I find it hard to get excited about. I think you used the phrase workhorse to describe him when you were previewing, Mike, and I think that's true. He is a hard-working player, but as the kind of central striker, he doesn't get many goals, and it was a really eyebrow-raising move when he went to Corfu, and that didn't turn out particularly well. So I think the jury is out a little bit on him, but perhaps it doesn't matter too much if he has Yonezawa in the wide position and Romero Frank, you know, on the opposite side. Perhaps the sort of overall team pattern means that there's not as much pressure on Koki Arita to get sort of, you know, 15 goals, which, you know, to be honest, I think is a bad idea to put pressure on him to get goals. So, yeah, probably a good thing. And yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. I think maybe everybody think from the Kagoshima perspective was a little bit disappointed with the seventh place finish last year. I think they only briefly sort of threatened to be in the promotion picture, didn't they? It was never really on the cards from quite early on. So, yeah, we'll wait and see. And I think you mentioned, perhaps just before we started recording, Ray Yonezawa, one of the, you know, sort of most stylish and technically gifted players in the division, I think, from that kind of wide left position. It'll be interesting to see if he gets more goals this year or if his role changes somewhat, depending on the formation and the tactics. Maybe he's more of a provider for other players. We'll have to wait and see. But yeah, you've turned me around on Kagoshima, Mike. I wasn't expecting too much before we started our chat. But looking at the squad and the comments you've made, especially about the coach, yeah, I don't see any reason why they shouldn't be targeting a sort of, you know, very upwardly mobile finish, and certainly an improvement on last season's, you know, pretty disappointing seventh place. Mike, I think that brings us pretty much to the end of our sort of in-depth team-by-team previews. But is there anything else that you wanted to add, or anything you wanted to say to help us to kind of set the scene for the season that's kicking off in a couple of weeks?
Well, I think that, yes, I think I can make a sort of like a closing remark. I mean, we also have an additional sort of question to help us wrap up from Jay Football Analytics. He says, which of these teams is most likely to upset a J1 or J2 team in the Emperor's Cup? So I think that logic says that off the back of these previews, that would be Ehime and Kagoshima, who I think are the best placed of the six teams that we've been talking about this time. I think that in one of the other previews, John, I said that I think there's a lot of interest in J3 this year. It's looking like a very different season compared with 2021 because of the four teams coming down from J2, each of whom is coming into the year in a very different circumstance, and we've sort of tried to highlight that in the previews. There's a huge variety among the clubs in the division, and again, as I've tried to use the previews to demonstrate, it's not just the bigger and the richer clubs who have a chance of promotion. So now we're all ready to go. Can't wait for the first round of matches over the weekend of Saturday the 12th, Sunday the 13th of March. And I hope that in order to follow the division, that listeners will stick with the J-Talk short corner segment of J-Talk Extra Time throughout the season.
Fantastic stuff, Mike. Yeah, totally agree. And I'm really pleased that you were willing and able to come back on board and continue with the J-Talk short corner for us on the J3 kind of beat for this season. I wasn't sure if you'd be sort of needing a lie down in a darkened room after last year, and maybe wondering if you'd, you know, perhaps regretting what you got yourself into, but that wasn't the case. You were keen to come back and do more, and yeah, the JTET family is very happy to welcome you back with open arms. So yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing the short corner each week during the season, and yeah, I think it's going to be a fascinating campaign. Obviously, in a way, it's the first. It's a more normal J3 with having 18 teams versus 15, two promotion places instead of, well, I guess it was two promotion places last year, but there isn't loads of teams going to come down from J2 this time. You know what I mean? I think we might be looking forward to a more regular season, if you like, but there's no such thing as regular when it comes to the J League or J3, is there? There's definitely going to be lots of excitement and lots of unexpected happenings along the way. And yeah, looking forward to the whole thing kicking off in just a couple of weeks' time. Yeah, as you said, March the 12th, March the 13th, isn't it, is the big kickoff. So J1 and J2 have gone already, but J3 sort of keeps us waiting a little bit longer. But yeah, looking forward to round one, and especially looking forward to hearing what you make of it on the short corner segments on the pod, Mike. So yeah, thanks for all your hard work that you've done on the season preview pod, Mike. I know it's a lot of work for you to kind of drill down in depth for each of the 18 teams, but it was really good for me to get the knowledge, and I hope it was good for the listeners as well. But I think we can leave our season preview pods for now and retire to get ready for the main event. So thanks as always for listening to the JTalk podcast and JTalk Extra Time, JTalk Short Corner. We really appreciate the support, whether it comes on the free feeds on Podbean or via Patreon. We really appreciate that support as well. So yeah, please keep listening, and yeah, let's enjoy another exciting J3 season together, starting in a week or so's time. But that's all for JTET for now. Thanks for listening, and speak to you soon. Bye for now.